Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
And good morning, all, and welcome back to another edition of Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and another show here on this Sunday morning, and a very good guest lined up for us. And she's got some serious credentials, as a matter of fact.
Well, she does. And all of our guests, I think, are on this show are smart, right? Because...
Because we need all the help we can get.
Sure, because we got to fill in the blanks. Thank you, guest.
Somebody has to make up for, you know, what we might lack. No, just kidding. But you know how, and I've explained this before to our listeners, you know, sometimes we just go, we search for interesting people to be guests on this show. And I came across this book entitled Edit Your Life, A Handbook for Living with Intention in a Messy World. And who doesn't want that? And I dug a little deeper into the book, and it's written by an award-winning writer who also happens to teach writing where? Oh, just Harvard and Oxford. That's it. That is all. So,
pshaw.
Yeah, I know. What a slacker. So, we're going to talk all about how to edit your life today with award-winning author Elizabeth Sharp McKetta. She's going to join us after our break to talk about her book. Now, guys, it's not her first book. She's written 11 others.
Wow.
Yeah, just a few. But we're going to be speaking with Elizabeth all about this one when we return from our first commercial break. And I am looking forward to it.
Oh, I've started to read it and it's phenomenal. And, you know, we've talked about this before, that I absolutely believe we are in a reciprocal relationship between our mental space and our physical space. Like, our stuff talks to us and our mental brain communicates with the stuff. And when we clear out, like, one of the best things you can do to feel better is to go organize something, clear out. And she's taken this to a much broader level about stepping back in our very busy, overwhelming lives and really first saying, okay, what do I really want here? How do I want to live? And how can I start editing and rearranging so that I'm loving my life more? And a lot of times that ends up being a simplification.
Absolutely. And there, you said that perfectly. So now I'm going to do the thing that I make fun of everybody else for doing. I'm going to say, oh, Carol, that was so smart.
Audience, just to let you know, she only says that about Carol. That never happens. Those words never come out of her mouth about me, just in case you're curious.
That is not true. But you're absolutely right. There is such a correlation between our physicality and our mentality. And I think the more you know, the more you know. And when you can start fixing, like, the non-tangible stuff, your tangible stuff, I don't know, gets a little easier, better.
And vice versa, yeah.
Yes, and vice versa. So I'm looking forward to talking with her about how to edit our lives. But before we do that,
let me complain about... Oh, I'm sorry. Did I just jump on you?
Did you? No. Well, okay. I would like to say, I would like to declare today National Pet Peeve Grievance Day. Oh. Why not? I mean, we have all these, we've got every day of the year is a national something or other day. Am I right or am I right?
March 26th.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Should you look that up? Find out what March 26th actually is in the calendar of national days that are just nonsense and completely made up.
Well, you can have two national days at once or more. So let's do it. I like it.
All right. So March 26th, National Pet Peeve Grievance Day. Should I start?
Well, considering you're the one that brought it all up, I think we have to let you start, right?
Okay. Let's see. Where do I start? All right. I'm going to start small, and then I'm going to work my way up.
Okay.
Oh, boy. Oh, great. There's more than
Frank
one. Hold
Barrett,
on.
Got your pillow?
Yeah, grabbing my pillow. Hold on.
Just gonna start small. All right. And these are the things. Now, listen, I'm not being picky, so to speak, but sometimes the little things, you know, like when you're talking about something positive, you can be like, oh, it's the little things that matter, right? A little wink of an eye or a little brush of a hand. Well, when it comes to pet peeves, sometimes the little stuff also matters peevishly. No?
Okay. We're still waiting. Clutching pillows.
All right. Are you neither one of you hearing me making mouth noises on cue?
Is that what that noise was? Oh, now it's going to be dead. Funny, that was not going to be on today's list, but now I will include it. Thank you.
Okay.
Tiny little minor pet peeve number one, garbage day. Why is that a pet peeve for me? I will let you know.
Because a mystery person puts your cans back.
Oh, no. Now the mystery person is still coming around. And is still a mystery. I appreciate the mystery person because I kind of like the way the mystery person puts my cans back. But that's close to what I was going to complain about. I'm going to complain because garbage day, for those of us, you have very specific instructions on as a homeowner that you have to put your cans a certain way in a certain place to make life easy for those who are collecting the garbage. And I get that and I do it. That's not my problem. My problem is when they do what they got to do and they put your garbage cans back onto your property.
Yep.
You know where I'm going, right?
Yep.
They could be upside down. They could be wide open in a rainstorm. They could be blocking your way so that if you're in a hurry and you just want to, like, you're driving, you've got to get out. You got to fix them right then and there. You can't wait till you come home. You can't do that. You got to get out. You got to tidy them up. You got to put them back. You got to do your thing and then go and then drive to work with your hands dirty, right? Because you had to touch them right before you got back in the car. Now, why can't they? We could put men on the moon. Why can't they simply lift them up with the little forklift that they use and put them right back down? Lift them up, put them down in the exact same place, in the exact same condition that they found them. Is that so hard? Is that too much to ask?
I wouldn't think so, but I'm going to say probably 20% of the time mine are knocked over, laying sideways. Yeah.
Mine's more than that.
Well, okay, and I'm also going to say that trying to put them back when they are no longer full of garbage and they are now just light, it probably leads to a lot of them falling over.
Ooh, defending the garbage guys.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on a second, Frank and Barry.
Yeah.
Because the six other days of the week where the garbage cans are just sitting there minding their own business waiting for your garbage to go in, like even day one when they might not have any more garbage in them, they sit there just fine. They don't topple over. They don't go dirty. Right? They just sit there like, do-de-o-dote, waiting for some garbage. Do-de-o-dote. Am I right or am I right? All right. Let me move on.
Okay. All right.
Let me ask you something. Have you guys ever gotten mad at yourselves for sneezing?
No.
Sneezing doesn't make you mad.
No.
Why would you? No. But I don't appear on national television every week either. Is that when this happened?
No. Sneezing happens all times of the day, but I get mad at myself when I sneeze because, well, I notice we are now in the first week of spring. I think allergies are already starting. Mm-hmm. I have been sneezing. I am not sneezing excessively, though that will happen as more pollen pops up. I am sneezing forcefully, and that makes me mad. Like.
Why?
Of course it does.
It's a pet peeve. It's a pet peeve. But, well, first of all, because when you sneeze forcefully, A, it's not very attractive. Like a whole, achoo! Right? You can't make that cute. You can't make that sexy. You can't. You try to stifle it. Then what happens? Your head explodes. Your head totally explodes. Your eyeballs pop out a little bit. Right? And you're uncomfortable. So you got to just let it sneeze. You got to let it come out at 90 miles an hour or however it's going to happen. You could do it in the car. Try doing it in the car when you're driving 60 miles an hour. Because now it's impossible. It's physically impossible. And look this up. It is physically impossible to sneeze with your eyes open. And if you do try to sneeze with your eyes open, they could totally fly out of your head. Sneezing is a problem. It's a societal problem.
I've always felt
that way, John. So her individual problem became a societal problem for Barry. You see that? Well, how that escalated?
That kind of happens a lot with Jonna's problems, though, right?
Jonna's drama. Yeah.
Now, there's a second part why sneezing is pet peevish. And you guys probably don't suffer this. This is also probably unique to me. But there is a person in my life who shall remain nameless, who is slightly younger than me, who has good abs, and with whom I am in a relationship. You know how, okay, let me, before I tell you what the problem is, because it's a problem. When you guys do sneeze, how many times in a row do you sneeze? Is it once, twice, three times?
It varies.
Often it's twice.
It's twice, Frank and Barry. That's right. Normal people sneeze twice. Hachoo, hachoo, and it's over. If you sneeze once, there's something wrong with you. If you sneeze more than twice, there is something wrong with you. All right? The person who shall remain nameless in my life, and this is no joke, I'm not exaggerating, even though every once in a while I might be prone to exaggeration. This is not one of those times. He sneezes not once, not twice, not three times, 11 times in a row every time. 11.
This is why he has such good abs.
I never thought of it that way. Guys, do you know how annoying it is?
Oh, that poor guy.
Sneeze 11 times in a row every time? Every time.
Like, does he have to go outside? Do you make him go outside?
I wish he would, because it's not, they're not small sneezes. They are full on, full force, guffaw, sneeze.
All right. So here's your challenge. The next time he starts, and you'll have plenty of time to capture this, I want you to turn on the video. It doesn't have to be on him, showing him, but start recording so that we can hear it. And then we can play it.
And John, sure. I have to tell you, by the way, because this is normally not in your wheelhouse, but the amount of empathy that you are showing for this better half of yours, for the 11 sneezes in a row that probably bother the hell out of him, is quite remarkable.
Listen, this Linda. Is why there's no empathy. This is why I have no empathy for him, because I believe if he really tried, he could control that with his mind.
I'm sure he just says to himself, man, I'm just gonna let myself sneeze 11 times because I like it.
Wondering, I can't help but wonder, and I wish if anybody out there listening is in the medical profession and a sneeze expert, I please text me or DM me or something, because I want to know if it's like a tick. Like a Tourette's type, because I don't understand why he can't control this. Like, one, two, stop. I don't get why he's going to go 11 times every time. It's not like six sometimes or eight sometimes.
11.
Or four sometimes. It's 11. And how do I know? Because every time it happens, it triggers me. And in order to control myself, I just have to sit there and count, like a countdown. Like, okay.
Eight more to go.
Right. I just got to survive eight more, seven more, six more. It drives me crazy. And I feel like it's something that he could control, and he purposely doesn't control it. And there's that. He also incidentally swallows loudly. And, these are two points of contention in our relationship. There's
and
no
he
reason.
Sometimes leaves the cabinet door open.
No, he all the time leaves the cabinet door open. This is a problem. This
have you created a list for him, or is he just, he knows them all?
He knows. Trust me.
And I'm sure, Jonna, I am sure that when he walks out of the kitchen and he has left the cabinet door open, that he is less giggling to himself inside his head. And I'm just going to claim ignorance yet again.
That's you.
Exactly.
And I'm going to record this. It's going to happen where I have my phone ready, and I might miss one sneeze, right? Because it'll start and then I'll like miss maybe that first one, but I'm going to get the rest.
Right.
And then you guys are going to apologize to me. You're going to owe me an apology. You're going to say you're sorry. You're going to maybe talk about me, to your
now, Jonna, we neither of us had any issue with the number 11. We did not claim you to be a liar or claim you to be exaggerating in that regard. So there will be nothing for us to apologize for if you do indeed record him sneezing 11 times. We were just discussing the fact that it's something that, you know, or at least I thought that really possibly bothers him. But again, you have no empathy for that.
That is a real nice try, Frankenberry. But here's what's going to happen. I'm going to record at least 10 of the 11 sneezes in the not too distant future. I'm going to play them for you. And then I'm going to play them for you repeatedly until you are tortured. Because think about this. I've been in a relationship with this over excessive sneezer for a lot of years. Multiply 11 sneezes by a lot of years. And it's a wonder why I am still sane. And then when you guys listen to it, maybe 3 or 4 times, you're going to go, oh, my God, that poor girl. That poor, poor girl.
That's what we're going to say.
That's exactly it. You're probably right.
Especially with allergy season starting. Spring has sprung.
Well, Jonna, isn't the number 11 like a powerful universe?
It is.
Message?
A very lucky number. I like the number
11. So maybe the next time he starts sneezing, it's time for you to pause and make a wish.
I'm going to wish him to stop sneezing. Okay. Always looking on the bright side. Can I move on to my final pet peeve?
There's more. I thought we were done. I got to get my pillow back again.
Me as well. Okay.
Okay. All right. Ready.
Okay.
Okay. And the final pet peeve of this morning, though I'm sure there are more, but in the interest of time.
You gave up the interest of time about 5-6 minutes ago.
I just want to follow up on something that I don't think I talked about on the air, but it involves internet trolls, specifically internet trolls who want to comment on my appearance, specifically my hair. Now, I did write a post that got a lot of buzz a couple weeks ago because I was doing a lot of, you know, TV stuff. Sometimes you're on every day during the week and sometimes you're on once during the week. But I was doing a lot because of this Murdoch murder trial. And some people came out of the woodwork who I don't know from all over the country. And, you know, some said nice things, some said not so nice things. But one lady in particular decided to tell me that my hair was, and I quote, awful. So I normally let that stuff go. I delete, I ignore, but whatever. But she just happened to catch me in a mood. And so I kind of schooled her. I wrote her back and I, you know, basically in a very nice way, told her to go scratch. But kind of. And I got so much buzz that I was actually during the week, I was looking at a piece of property that I was interested in. And the realtor said to me, oh, my God. And I didn't really know this realtor, like, the, you know, I don't know her personally. And she's like, I read that Facebook post. Oh, my God. It was so good. Like, so I got a little fandom. Anyway, so that's not real. That's a peeve, but that's not the peeve I was going for. So the peeve I'm going for is after I did that, this woman, internet troll, wrote me back.
Oh, I didn't see that part.
So I didn't post that one. She wrote me back. And basically what she said to me privately was, well, listen, I wasn't trying to be rude. I was trying to help you.
I was just trying to be constructive about your really crappy hair.
I was trying to help you because, well, I mean, your hair is so choppy and so straight. And, well, why don't you fix it?
Oh, for real?
So after she did that, now I decided that I'm not going to keep it going, you know, so I decided I'm going to block her, which I did after that, just because, like, you know, but anyway.
You blocked her.
So I blocked her. Yeah.
Which is kind of like editing things out of your life.
Oh.
Boom.
Do you know what I love? I love when I'm not expecting it. And boom, out it comes. And that was a good one. All right. On that note, as a reminder, when we come back from this break, following that beautiful, I'm going to go with top 10 Sigu, top 10 of all time.
Okay.
We are we are going to be speaking with a writer extraordinaire who also teaches at Harvard and Oxford, Elizabeth Sharp Maketa, who's going to be talking to us all about her latest book, which is not her first, it's her 12th, Edit Your Life, a handbook for living with intention in a messy world, when we come back.
All right, that sounds good, and I'm sure most of us out there understand what living in a messy world is all about, so hopefully you'll be able to learn something from our friend who is on the way. And you've got Jonas Spilborn, Carol Pesci, and myself, and we will be right back, with more from Happy Hour, so please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again here to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. And we are getting now into segment number two, which of course is our segment where we talk to one of our illustrious guests. And we do have another illustrious guest today who's actually, she's going to help us a little bit, maybe clear our heads.
And our lives. And Frank, kudos to you, because I love the word illustrious. We rarely use words that big on this show, but I don't like.
I know it's a lot of syllables, huh?
No, I know why you did it. I know why you did it, because today's guest is super duper smart and you're trying to impress her, and that's okay. So let me tell you a little bit about who we are talking to. Coming up, we are speaking with Elizabeth Sharp Maketa. Now, she has a short bio and a longer bio, and I'm not going to do the short bio because it just doesn't do her justice. So let me tell you about Elizabeth. She is an award-winning writer and writing teacher and a mother of two with a PhD, I love this, on the intersections between fairy tales and autobiography, as well as a seven-year streak of writing weekly poems for strangers. That already makes me feel joyful. She teaches writing at Oxford. She teaches writing for Oxford Department for Continuing Education and for the Harvard Extension School, where she won their highest teaching award. She's authored 12 books. That's 12 books. Most recently, a personal growth guide entitled Edit Your Life, which happens to be the book we are talking all about today. And frankly, I cannot wait. Elizabeth, welcome to Happy Hour.
So happy to be on Happy Hour. Thank you so much to you three for bringing me on.
We are thrilled to have you. And for the record, I just want everybody to know I found you. You're welcome.
Okay, Jonna, let me say it right off the bat. You're the brilliant one today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, and I'll do my best to ask a stupid question then, so you'll look even better.
Which is usually my job. So, Elizabeth, obviously you're a prolific writer. Your latest book is entitled Edit Your Life, a handbook for living with intention in a messy world. Tell us, what you mean by that?
Yes, this is a good question. This is a very good question. And I'm still, by the way, giggling about your illustrious, which is very generous. I just last week recorded the ebook for Edit Your Life. And there was one of the words that I had read plenty of times in writing, but it turned out didn't know how to pronounce aloud, which is assuage. Assuage.
Yes.
Isn't it assuage? Is it assuage or assuage?
I mean, we had to look it up, and now I don't even remember. I think it's assuage. But I didn't feel so illustrious in that particular moment. So Edit Your Life is a book that I wrote when I wrote it when we were living 3 years, my family and I, two young children and my husband and two dogs in a tiny house, because we were feeling overwhelmed by our life at the time. And we thought, let's just simplify some things and get to the good parts version and see how it goes. So the book takes the principles that I've taught in writing classes and through my experience editing literary journals, and basically the principles of editing anything, be it a book or a poem or a packing list or a fill in the blank, generally written thing, and it applies them to life. And ideally, they are elastic enough that they can be applied to pretty much any part of any life with a couple of adaptations here and there.
I love that. I love the analogy in that. So is this a book, like, for example, and we have talked about this kind of a lot lately, where I don't know whether post-pandemic or whatever the reason, people are feeling like They either want more or they want less, or they want to really shape their worlds. But a lot of people don't even know where to begin. Is this a good place to begin?
I think this is a very good place to begin. And I think that one of the, if we can call it, one of the benefits, you know, of course, the pandemic took us all down. Yeah. And also, I think it left us all with a couple of maybe renewed certainties about what in our life mattered. And what I found in a lot of my conversations that certainly resonated with my own life is that we were terrified when all the other stuff went away. I've got school age kids. That was kind of scary to all of a sudden be a homeschooler. We, you know, that had its challenges. And of course we were not used to spending that much time in each other's company, you know, in close quarters. But so I think at the end of the day, after, you know, we had sort of all settled into the pandemic, we felt like there were three things that we were glad to have. And one for us was projects that we could do at home. That just the simple act of, you know, in my children's case, making dwellings out of cardboard that kept arriving from Amazon, or for me, writing, or, you know, fill in the blank, knitting, many of my friends got into, gardening, that it just seemed like people really rekindled a new interest in pastimes that are, you know, very sweet and very old. And we don't really have that much time to do. So it seemed having a project at home was a good thing. And also, I think all of a sudden nature took on a whole new importance. I don't know if you felt that where you live, but it seemed like wherever people were, going to the park, seeing a tree, being in the yard, just any form of green suddenly felt like, oh, how did we not know how nice this was? And we all felt just, you know, this, I mean, it was harder in cities because green is so much harder to come by. So everyone seemed like they were, you know, fleeing for the hills for good reason. So it seemed all of a sudden like, oh, right, nature's good. And then the third is that those of us who, you know, got in, you know, piled into cells together, or were, you know, with families that, who we enjoy spending time with and maybe during busy days don't have as much time to spend with, it felt like all of a sudden, if you are living in a house with people you like, feel safe with, that's a pretty good gig. So it seemed like project, nature, and people. And all of a sudden you think like, we've got the world. Isn't this, you know, isn't this lucky? And I feel that was a kind of nice souvenir for a lot of people that then probably led to a whole lot of reevaluation of the rest of the stuff when it became an option again.
That's it precisely. Another good, it was a reevaluation of, you know, pre-pandemic stuff. And I like one of the words you use in describing your book is whether you're pivoting. And I find that maybe me personally and a lot of people I know are pivoting now because of what you just said. We've reprioritized what's really important. But at the same time, a lot of people I think are a little dumbfounded as to how, like, how do you edit? Like, what, like, where do you start? How does the process take shape? Because I think that confuses a lot of people, including me.
Yes, this is a very good question. And
wait, could you repeat that? Could you? I'm sorry, I don't think I heard that. You said it's a very what question, Elizabeth?
This is an illustrious, brilliant
question. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry. I must have had a bad connection for a second. Thank you for that.
She's not going to be able to get her ego out of the room now. Thanks, Doc.
So, yes, where do we edit? And where do we start? And I think that the only reasonable place to start, again, whatever we are editing, whether it's our relationship with technology or how we talk to our spouse or our grocery list, is to first assess what this thing is. And this is something that I really insist on to my students. I'm very talking head about this particular thing, because I think often in writing, you know, the students want to say something, you know, brilliant and important, as, you know, as do all of us. We want to be illustrious. So often the risk is to go in and just say like, ah, I read your book. It should be set in Paris and have a corgi in it, without even paying any attention to what it is. So I always encourage my students, slow down. Step number one is just figure out, what is this thing? What are you reading? What is this thing? And once we've assessed that and talked about that, and that could take, you know, a whole class period, then the next step is, what is it trying to be? You know, what are the pulses in it that feel alive or interesting and seem like they're trying to move in a direction, however clumsy and unfinished? And so taking that to a life, I would say it's the same thing, that we figure out this thing that feels like it needs a change, that just is. And how do we know if it needs a change? Probably if it exhausts us, or if we get grumpy when thinking about it. or, you know, any number of things that just sort of drag us down. And so we think, okay, this definitely needs an edit. So first question is, what is it in its current state? You know, what is my grocery list? How do I talk to my spouse? You know, how do things work in this situation? And what should it be? What would it like to be? Let's figure out the moonshot here. And once we've done a little bit of this excavation work, we have a clearer direction for our edits. And that is always where I would suggest starting, just looking closely.
I love this. I want to say, so you're basically saying, if I'm correct, you're saying, look, you don't have to do this global edit. You don't have to, you know, say, oh, my life sucks. I'm going to, you know, do this, that, and the other thing. You could start small. Like we were talking off air, Carol cleaned out her kitchen cabinets and that felt good. Like, you can start that small and benefit, and then like kind of keep adding to it. Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You even advocate for that in your book. I think that's the point that I've just gotten to in your book, is take this principle. And we've talked about this many times on the show about this reciprocal relationship between our experiences around us, our things, our mental space or emotional space. There's just this relationship and how powerful simplifying can be, but to first get in touch with what really matters, what brings you joy. I mean, I feel like you are the Marie Kondo of life. And for those of you who are familiar, she wrote The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And I think for anybody listening who feels stuck, who feels overwhelmed, or maybe just blah, like Groundhog Day, right? Just another day, but I'm not filled with joy, to take these principles and a little baby steps have incredible power when you keep taking them. I think you said something to that effect in your book as well. So starting small is a wonderful place to start.
Yes, starting small is so important. And sometimes I think when we're really overwhelmed, starting small is the only place we can start. And
yep.
That's where we start.
Yep.
Yeah. And that makes it sound much more doable than if you're feeling overwhelmed and you think you've got to change everything all at once. You can't do that.
No.
You can't do everything all at once.
Well, and that's kind of ironic too, if you would try to do something like that, because you feel overwhelmed, I'm going to overwhelm myself by trying not to be overwhelmed. You know,
exactly. Like, it's just not going to work. That is doomed to fail. But small edits and sort of baby steps and just sort of thinking, what does this do? What does this add? And also, I think pretty important, and this was something that came up early on in the book when people were getting excited about editing. One of the things that it seems we have a misconception about is that editing is only ever taking away. But back to the writing analogy, plenty of times a piece of, you know, a book doesn't work because there's not enough in it. You know, the characters are not full enough, or the sentences are too dull. And so if we can figure out what is this thing trying to be about and where is it, then we might end up adding a lot of things. You know, it may be that, you know, Carol, in your kitchen analogy, that in addition to the stuff that gets thrown away or minimized or passed on, there's some things that you want to maximize. Like maybe you love sipping tea in your kitchen. What you really need is a little nook where you can, you know, have a view and enjoy that sort of quiet meditative space. Who knows? But something will probably be added in addition to the things that will get shifted around and removed, I would think.
So, right. And this is what your process, I'm sorry, John, your process is like the first step is if you're not feeling fully satisfied in your life, the first step is that awareness, that examination, right? To take a pause. Sometimes we just get stuck in a routine, keep doing the same thing over and over again. And to just take that pause and say, okay, something feels off. Let me start examining it. And this is step one.
This is step one, is just examine. Don't do a thing. Don't throw a thing away. Don't buy a thing. Just examine. And in the first section, the book has three parts, and the first section is actually called Examine Your Life. And the first chapter of that is just look closely. And then the next one is figure out what works. Because even when we feel most overwhelmed and out of sorts with things, there's generally something that works. Don't you think even in a mess of a kitchen or even in a mess of a book, there's something that's alive that we don't want to start from scratch on?
That's an excellent point. And I think it's really important. You're right. When people think, when you say the word edit, we think of subtraction.
Remove. Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be subtraction. And I also want to say for the record that you mentioned the kitchen analogy with Carol. And Carol has two kitchens because she really enjoys having a kitchen near her wherever she goes. And Remember, Carol, when we used to make fun of your little second kitchen? What did we
The AM kitchen. That's where I'm sitting right now because there are people in my main kitchen.
I love this. I love this. Kitchens are such nice spaces, aren't they? That's never occurred to me to have a second kitchen.
This is a this is off our master. It's a like a little coffee pot. There's a TV, fireplace, sink, refrigerator. It's the smallest space in the house and it's heaven.
Oh, that sounds like heaven. And what a brilliant idea. Oh my gosh, I now want a second kitchen. That is so smart. Like, I would prefer to be in a kitchen than pretty much anywhere else in the house. Like, who needs a sofa and a bed when you have a lovely kitchen with, you know, drinks and stones and oh my gosh, like, oh, kitchens are such a pleasure.
With a love seat. Yeah. How many people have a love seat in their kitchen? I guess
that's such a good idea.
It's a small space, but it's awesome. And then this like makes me think of what you, the whole main exercise, moving out of your main house into your simplified, smaller space.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Way to maximize kitchen because yes, I mean, it seems that that's a space that you use very well. And I loved when we were in the shed, I loved having the love seat. Ours was actually a foldable futon so that we could have guests spend the night. And I loved having it in the kitchen. I love that all things took place, you know, in the place where we feed ourselves and where we just like the heartbeat of the house. It feels so good to be in the space where the food is, the warm space where people go.
I could rename my kitchen the coffee and wine room. That's really all I need space for. Don't even need a toaster. I just need a coffee pot and a wine opener.
Jonna, I don't want you to have a toaster because you'll burn your house down.
There you go. It meets your needs. It does what it needs to do. It helps you live the life you need to live. And that's all it has to be. Who needs the toaster?
Well, and that is true. And that's what this book is about. This book is about helping us live the life that we want to live, figuring out how to choose it, and then figuring out how to make it a reality.
Yes, it's huge. And it sounds like part of what I think both of you have done brilliantly and is figuring out this is how it feels good for me to dwell. And, you know, and not to be sidetracked by people saying like, but you only get one kitchen or, but you need more than just coffee and wine. Like in this case, this is how you do it. And that's how you do it. And I think all of us, you know, are so unique and peculiar in the ways that we dwell, that it serves to just figure out here's how I like to use a kitchen. And let's go from there. Let's distill to this. And then it also helps for step three, which is what is not necessary in this. And it sounds like, you know, a whole lot of things when you really get down to it, once you've really figured out this is what I need in a workspace or a job, or, you know, this is how I want to feel and function in my relationships. Like a whole lot of stuff goes out the window once those questions are answered.
And can I say, and that's another important point, because you're never going to be done. I think it's okay. Like you can edit forever.
Good point.
Never have.
Oh, what a brilliant point, Jonna. Oh my gosh. You just are on fire.
Oh, mommy, please make the bad co-host stop.
But you don't, like, this is something that you can, when you figure out how to do it, you can continually do it and continually improve.
Yes. Yes.
We could go on, but I know we have to wrap here with Elizabeth Sharp McKetta. But Elizabeth, if people do want to get your book in all of its forms, where can they do that? And I know, like, so you don't coach people, but is there a way people could connect with you beyond the book if they wanted to? Can you tell us how to find you, basically?
Yes, of course. And the book you should be able to find the book anywhere. Try your local bookstore because they, you know, they need the business and do the most for the community. So normally you can find me through my website, ElizabethSharpMcKetta.com. And I do, and I teach writing classes and both through Harvard and Oxford and private ones. And currently as part of this book spring, I'm teaching an 8-week course on that goes along with the book, because it does have, you know, 8 chapters and has the sort of class feel in that you move from step one to step two. And so this is my first time doing it. So like any first class, it feels, you know, like a guinea pig with many things I need to improve for the next class, but I'm really enjoying it. And I think people are getting a lot out of it. So I'm thinking on the sort of think about later list is whether it might be fun to do that in 8 weeks courses throughout the year. So if so, I'll put them up on my website, but it's really been fun.
Very, very nice. And I just want to remind our listeners, Elizabeth is spelled with an S, not a Z. ElizabethSharpMaketa.com is where you can find out about Elizabeth. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is great. This is a great book. And like with all of our guests, we never leave you alone. So we hope to talk to you again.
I hope you never leave me alone. It is so good to meet you. Thank you for all the great and funny work you do. Your show leaves me learning and laughing, which is the best thing. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us today, Elizabeth. And you enjoy the rest of your day. And hopefully lots of folks stop out. They buy the book and they start doing some editing and feel better about themselves and their lives. So thank you very much for joining us. We still got more to come here. Segment 3 is on the way. This is Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself, and we will be right back.
Live better and laugh harder. It's Sunday morning and Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here. It's Jonna Spilbore. It is Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
Huh, nicely done this morning. Nicely done.
Very nice.
So, but it was very nice to talk to our guest today, Elizabeth. She definitely brought up some things that I'm sure the audience could use.
Yeah, and I couldn't come at a better time. I think so many of us feel just overwhelmed. So much going on through our heads and coming at us, and having the ability to take a step back and really edit your life out to like, okay, let's only keep the things we love and get rid of the things we don't need. Can't wait to finish the book.
And this is the perfect time of year as well. I mean, everybody always thinks of the concept of spring cleaning right around now, you know, finally getting a chance to open up some windows, air your place out, you know, maybe fill some bags up with some clothes or move some things
air
around.
Your grievances,
or like you said,
your
yes,
pet peeves.
Exactly. Tell your better half that he needs to stop sneezing 11 times in a row. You do all that, you know, as the weather starts to pick up and you've got open windows with a couple of cats sitting in them. So yes, this is the time of the year that you might think about editing your life.
And I think any time of the year is good. See, that's the issue for me. And I think a lot of people is we get stuck feeling like whatever, like crap or like we're bored or unmotivated, whatever the feeling is, that's not good. And then we forget that we can change all that. Like we can do it. It's in our control. And once you remember that and realize that, then there should be no stopping you. So you can't read enough or learn enough about how to do that. And because everybody's different too. What works for me might not work for you. And there are different ways to go about it. But
And we're such, I think, as a society, like driven for more and more and more, accomplish, get this done, acquire this, get this. And oftentimes what can make us enjoy our lives more is to dial back, right? And cut things out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And this is this might be a little bit off on a tangent, but you know how people often say, pick your battles, right? Like, you know, choose the things that you're going to kind of spend your time on. But I don't like the phrase pick your battles. I like the phrase choose your outcomes. So if something in your, and I say that to all, especially I say it to all my divorce clients, but it fits in so many different applications. Like if just something isn't right in your life, you know, don't choose your battle, choose your outcome. What would you rather have it look like? How would you rather be? And then do the things it takes to get there. So whether it's, you know, do you want to be mad at the garbage people for overturning your garbage cans every Tuesday morning? Or do you want to just leave them there and hope that your nice neighbor is going to come by right for you?
And there you go, Carol. That's what it comes down to. Jonna still gets what she wants in the long run. Somebody else to make sure that her garbage cans are all set. Either the garbage people or some strange mystery person.
Or maybe it's the people who keep ringing your doorbell.
Oh, I should have put them on my pet peeve list.
Yeah, there's still time.
Yeah, no.
A couple minutes here.
I think we had plenty of the people knocking on your door last week as a pet peeve. I think you're good there.
But it happened again, Frankenberry.
I did not know that they have returned because you still have not yet heard the word.
Heard the word.
Heard the word.
Yeah, whatever word it is they want to speak to you.
Well, let's just say they weren't selling Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, okay, no, so we've confirmed this. All right, good.
Because I wish I wish they were. One other note, which is totally random, but since we are talking to a crazy cat lady guy, Frankenberry, I just want to give you a little update on my stray, which I'm not sure, again, if it's a stray, if it's a feral, I have no idea. But this little stray or feral, whatever it is, who's been coming around now for, I don't know, a few months, I'm going to say. Every time this cat comes around and every time I go out there with a little plate of cat food, if the cat's comfortable in its little cat house, it'll look at me like, who the heck are you? And get all like verklempt and jump up and get ready to leave. But and every day I say to this cat, cat, you have seen me do this. You have seen me extend my arm with this little plate of food 100 times at this point. 100. Why do you look at me like you don't know who I am?
No, they know who you are. Yes. Hey, look, Jonna, if it makes you feel any better, there's a couple of cats at the house that still do that. And I've been, you know, if I can help out and feed the cats on occasion, they will still go. And I'll look at them and I'll do the same thing, except it'll be like, guys, I've been here 5 years. Okay. Why are you still running away from me?
But well, that makes me feel a little better because I don't understand why this cat looks at me with surprise in his eyes every day, like Groundhog Day.
Does it hiss at you?
No. The cat has not made one single noise in all the times that I have encountered the cat. Won't hiss, won't show its teeth.
Well, don't take that personally.
Oh, even worse.
Just keep feeding them. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. But I've decided that this cat ain't cool, which is my own segue because next week there is an article that I want us to talk about that I found online entitled 19 Traits of a Cool Person That Can't Be Faked. 19.
Wow.
We're going to talk about that next week because I'm going to go through them. I probably got them all. If there's 19 that can't be faked of a cool person, I probably got 20.
Okay. And again, Jonna will follow that with, okay, in the interest of time.
Yeah, edit that list down.
Yeah, we're going to edit this list down. Hey, well, listen, you know, speaking of that and speaking of editing our lives, thank you very much to Elizabeth Sharp McKenna for joining us today and telling us about her latest book. And we will be back again next week to find out exactly how you
how
are
cool.
Cool.
I am. And how, where we stand in relation. Maybe right. Together. Frankenberry, maybe me and you together will come close.
Yes,
if we add our numbers up.
We could. We could. We combine our possible cool forces, we could be one big cool.
One cool person, yes. Between the two of us.
Yes. So that's what we've got on the way next week. For Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry. Thank you again so much for listening to Happy Hour. And we'll talk to you next Sunday. Be good.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.